We've got Executive Director Wendy Fisher from Utah Open Lands on the line. Good morning, Wendy.
Good morning, Carolyn.
So you've had a successful 2019 with your organization, and maybe you can start off by just sort of giving us an overview or recap of things. I know that the City Council will be taking a vote on the conservation easement recommendation for the Bonanza Flat open space area, but why don't you give us a rundown, please?
Yeah, absolutely. And I apologize, I've been a little under the weather, but we started off 2019 after the successful passage of the Treasure Hill Armstrong Snow Ranch Pastures Bond in 2018, you know, really racing to raise the money for the Armstrong Snow Ranch Pastures. And I could leave the audience with a cliffhanger, but I think we all know how that turned out. Not only did we successfully protect the Armstrong Snow Ranch Pastures, but as we were going in for those final dollars, we got the announcement that Carrie Armstrong would also be donating a conservation easement on the Armstrong Barn property. So, you know, the two Armstrong families, we were just so grateful that we were able to bring that across the finish line. And then also in 2019, something very relevant to what you brought up, Carolyn, with respect to Bonanza Flat, was not only were we working in partnership with the city on the conservation easement and the management plan recommendations, but then Utah Open Lands was also aware that there were a couple of inholdings in Bonanza Flat, namely what we call the Dederco Veta Grande inholding and the Bransford inholding. And we had been talking with those folks for a while. They both had other offers out there for development. But at the end of the day, we were again grateful to see that the landowners wanted a conservation solution for their property. And so both the Dalto family and then also Mary Bransford leader, Carolyn Bransford McDonald, and Ann Bransford, the three Bransford sisters, descendants of the Silver Queen, they decided that their property right off of that Guardsman Pass Road was something that should end up in conservation. They couldn't donate it, but we were able to get a generous donation from an individual who'd been a donor to the Bonanza Flat campaign. And then also both of those were brought to the City Council. Those were intended to end up in ownership with the city, with us holding the conservation easement as part of the larger Bonanza Flat conservation easement. And, of course, we participated in the funding alongside Park City as a great partner to get both of those inholdings shored up.
So, Wendy, will those be treated the same way with a conservation easement, or will there be accommodations made to those particular parcels?
No, those will now all be part of the Bonanza Flat conservation easement. Originally, in the Bonanza Flat conservation easement, as we talked about our recommendation, we always felt that at such time that we were able to acquire some of either adjacent lands or inholdings, that it would be really valuable to have that all under kind of one management scenario. And so because this has happened before the final approval of the conservation easement, those are just now part of that map that is Bonanza Flat conservation area.
Okay. Well, let's. Can you talk a little bit about some of the details around the easement itself and what the City Council will be voting on early this next month, early in the year?
Absolutely. So I think first and foremost, you know, the conservation easement is the document that forever protects that property from being developed. And so there are permitted uses, there are prohibited uses, things that can't happen on the property. But then we've also identified within the conservation easement different management areas. And those management areas really are based on a lot of the natural resource inventory work that we did in 2017 and then continued into 2018. So we looked at the property from all seasons and basically, you know, really use that to inform the conservation easement and the management plan. So the management plan and the conservation easement work in tandem to really do our best job in managing that property there were a lot of a lot of issues that people identified throughout the process. We had public input. We had technical and jurisdictional stakeholders that were a part of a series of meetings that were conducted by Utah Open Lands and the city. And what was the result of those meetings was really what we've put in practice with the conservation easement and the management plan. And that includes a headwaters area, because, of course, some of the funding that came in came from water managers who wanted to see the water values protected. Some of that is a backcountry area, and then a front country area that's closer to some of the development and some of the resorts. And so it's really, as we look at it, it's both a higher level of management for that property, but also a sustainable level of management for that property. For example, one of the things that we've looked at is the fact that there will only be parking for 175 vehicles. And that came from our surveys that we did on site and trail counters to see how the property was being used. And there are other things that are important that come from the management plan that dovetails. And part of that is some of the trails that have been developed on the property will actually not be open all year round. And they'll have a specific season so that we can both manage and accommodate the wildlife in the area.
So let's talk about that vehicle restriction. I mean, it used to be a free-for-all parking up on Bonanza Flat, I guess. Now there are designated trailhead areas, parking areas. I presume all of those now do have the toilets or facilities in place. Is that correct?
Yes, they do.
Okay, and then what, when you say it's limited to 175 vehicles, what are there backup transit plans in place to allow more people to access the area but maybe not drive their cars?
Well, I think that there are a couple of things that need to be looked at and considered. It as part of what we looked at in the management plan and with the technical and the jurisdictional committees. There was really a hope that we would be able to really look at the carrying capacity of the land, and you can't solve all of the other jurisdictional issues. I mean, Carolyn, there's no question that recreation is something that we benefit from here in the state. Maybe we don't always recognize the best ways to ensure recreational opportunity, and in fact, the Wasatch Canyons are more visited than Yellowstone National Park. And there are some things that need to happen in the Wasatch Front and in the canyons to deal with parking and restrooms and those sorts of things, but we can't solve all of those issues on Bonanza Flat. So it was really looking at some of the future uses that we know that are going to occur, making trail connections so that we're dispersing some of the recreation. There's trail connections to the WOW Trail, for example, and the 9,000-foot trail that got created, and then also Mid-Mountain Trail. So with all of those different tools in the toolbox, what we're really trying to do is accomplish not loving the place to death. The New Bloods Lake Trail, for example, I think is great at demonstrating how we've created a better trail, a more sustainable trail, as opposed to what was there before. I know there are some concerns that people have raised about the fact that the Guardsman Pass parking has basically been taken down to nothing. There are some parking spots there, but it's really meant as a shuttle drop-off point with the new Bloods Lake trailhead. And part of the reason for that really was talking with Unified Police, talking with UDOT, talking with Wasatch County, talking with various others, and recognizing that on some holiday weekends, we observed people actually parking in the roadway, which created a really unsafe condition. Now, UDOT and I know Wasatch County as well have looked at parking restrictions even on the road. So really what we're trying to do is get people to utilize the trailhead parking to be safe and to also realize that, yeah, there's going to be a carrying capacity limit to all of these recreational areas that we love. So finding ways to take transit is definitely something that needs to happen.
Well, and this year, some of the resorts in the Big and Little Cottonwood Canyons are starting to either charge for parking or provide some kind of benefit in terms of where parking can occur if you're in a vehicle three or more. Do we ever anticipate charging for parking up there?
I don't believe that's at all in the plans. I do know that that is obviously a strategy that a lot of these different agencies are having to use. There are limited dollars, and certainly one of the things that we think has been a great value, and it was another success that we saw in 2019, is that you have both the Lee Ray McAllister Fund and then the Governor's Office of Outdoor Recreation. And I think if anybody wanted to call their legislator and let them know that those are two funding sources that really sustain the recreational values that support our economies here in the state of Utah, that's something that we can all do, because the Governor's Office of Outdoor Recreation is providing funding to aid in creating trailheads, creating trails, but also now they've been have some funding for maintenance of those facilities, which is fantastic. And in fact, Utah Open Lands received the 2018, actually, but we received it in 2019, Governor's Office of Outdoor Recreation Stewardship Award. And that was for our work on tens of thousands of acres of protection, as well as what we did on Bonanza Flat. And that award, I really see, Carolyn, as a demonstration of the great partners that we have in Park City, in Mountain Trails Foundation, staff members like Logan Jones with Park City and Heinrich Dieters. They are all great partners, and that's really, I think, that award reflected the partnership we were able to achieve on Bonanza Flat.
So just a couple more questions on Bonanza Flat. The winter access, snowmobiles, that type of thing, what is in the conservation easement draft proposal, and what will the city be voting on with that?
Well, we feel that we really listened to some of the adjacent landowners who wanted to make sure that they continued to have safety corridors. And in fact, one of the first things that I did was to interview the different homeowners associations up in the area. And they really identified Deep Hill, drew, you know, a line on the map saying this is really an important safety corridor for us in the winter. And so, of course, the road is closed seasonally, but there will remain safety corridor access that is outlined in the conservation easement. But there was a very strong recommendation from our stakeholder group and from the public that really they didn't want to see motorized recreational use, that that's just not something that really fits in with what the community wanted to see in terms of recreation occurring on that property. So it is not open for recreational snowmobiling, but there will be these safety corridors.
So there will be access for homeowners, property owners to get to their property on snowmobiles, but there won't be people just going up for snowmobile fun, that type of thing.
Yeah, and, you know, again, that was really response, recognizing that these other folks, you know, had some concerns about safety corridors for them to get to their adjacent properties and to provide that from, you know, a safety perspective. Now, you know, people will be able to utilize the roads. So, you know, that's obviously we're not restricting motorized use on actual designated county roads.
Okay. So how will this be enforced?
Well, I think that's always the million-dollar question that I think we get into. Part of what, you know, we're hoping is through information and through working with various different individuals. And then, yes, we're also going to be up there monitoring. We have been doing that the last couple of years, so we know where some of the pressure points are. But I think it really comes down to people understanding that there are places for people to go and do motorized recreation. In fact, Utah Open Lands protected Snake Creek Canyon, which is just over the canyon there from Bonanza Flat in Wasatch Mountain State Park, and motorized recreation is allowed there. So this isn't a commentary on, you know, we just don't want motorized recreation. That's just not appropriate for this particular piece of property. And everything that we've heard from managers along those lines is, it's really best to have, you know, people who are either guiding or creating ways for people to get around a piece of property. And that's just, you know, we don't have some sort of concessionaire that's going to be up there doing motorized guiding service or setting track for that.
Okay. And then just quickly, the Girl Scout land, has that now been transferred to Utah Open Lands? And is that considered part of the conservation easement?
So part of what people will see on January 9th is a consideration with Park City and the Girl Scouts for an exchange. And as many people know, when Bonanza Flat was purchased, there were also some leases that were in place. And the Girl Scouts actually have some of their structures, their cabins, and some of their programming that occurs on Bonanza Flat. So the goal on that really was a constant conversation with the Girl Scouts of Utah to see how best we could ensure that their programming, which is just phenomenal, could continue. I don't think people realize that nationally, only about 6% of Girl Scouts actually get out and have these outdoor camping experiences. But because of places like Camp Cloud Rim here in Utah, the Girl Scouts of Utah are able to get 20% of our girls out into those sorts of wilderness-like experiences. And so they had purchased some additional land, and we're, again, Park City and the Girl Scouts, it's something that people are going to be able to see on January 9th when this comes before the City Council.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you very much. That's Wendy Fisher, Executive Director with Utah Open Lands. Thanks for joining us. Happy New Year. Good morning. It is 8:35. You're listening to the Local News Hour, and our next guests this morning, Beth Armstrong. She's with the People's Health Clinic with her surprise guest and special announcement, Dr. John Hanrahan. Welcome. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks, Carolyn.
Yeah. So I have a very blank page here in terms of my
very
prep.
Cryptic.
My prep questions. It was a cryptic interchange with you last week. Why don't you just start off and give us some revealing information?
So over the past last year in 2019, it was our 20th anniversary year, and Dr. Hanrahan had retired from the clinic to go and do his, I call it his rotary boondoggle. And then after some searching for a medical director, we finally found a wonderful new medical director, and it's Dr. John Hanrahan.
Who's sitting right here next to you. Okay. You wrestled him away from his boondoggle.
I did.
Okay, well, welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm really excited to come back to the clinic. The boondoggle was a volunteer commitment I made 3 years ago to Rotary in Utah, and it's the time commitment for that has dropped off dramatically over the last year, and so I was back looking for what I'm going to do next, and talked to Beth, and the position was still available, and so I said, please hire me back.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about what it means, having come from a position of working with the clinic for a long time, and now directing. How will that be? How will it be different for
you?
Well,
it's really the same position. As medical director, I primarily will be providing clinical care for our patients, but will additionally be handling medical director administrative duties, you know, kind of supervising our volunteer providers, our mid-level providers, running our key performance indicators program, things like that.
Okay. And how many volunteers are we talking about?
Right now we have about 43 medical providers, and on top of that, another 100 or so non-medical providers at the clinic.
Okay.
That's really what makes the clinic work. There will be myself and Rochelle Flynn, who is a physician assistant and an awesome provider. The two of us are the two staff providers, and then without these many dozens of medical providers volunteering, we would not be able to do what we can do.
So it sounds like it's a real scheduling embarkment. I mean,
it
as
is.
Far as
we actually have a clinic coordinator, that's Dahlia Gonzalez, who assist us with making sure that the clinic is staffed properly and all the patients scheduled daily. On some days, we have as many as 5 providers in the clinic providing care for our patients, which makes for busy days in our clinic.
Sure. And with the proposition passing in the at the ballot box this year, expanding Medicaid, do you anticipate a change in your, in your services and how busy you are? Will there be a shift?
That's a great question, but no. Because of the patients that we currently see, we won't really see any change in the number of patients that we have coming in. It will help those people. So as you know, Medicaid expansion, full expansion just went through. And so as of the beginning January of 2020, we'll have full expansion in the state of Utah up to 138% of the federal poverty level, which is wonderful. It'll cover another probably 122,000 individuals in the state. We don't anticipate that we'll see a drop in
so
patients.
So those are not your patients
those are
then,
not
typically?
Patients, not
okay.
typically.
Okay. How many patients a week, a month, a year have you been
well,
seeing
last
there?
Last year, I believe we came close to, if we didn't exceed, 10,000 patient visits. And that includes everything from, you know, me seeing somebody with diabetes to having someone come in for a blood draw to having someone come in to see our pharmacist or our patient educator, that sort of thing. So that's across the board. I really can't remember the numbers for actual, you know, health provider visits.
Mm. On a daily basis, on average, we see about 40 patients in the clinic each day.
Okay. And so what happens, John, when you have a patient that needs further medical treatment, a more advanced or, you know, serious kind of condition? What happens then to that patient?
Well, that's a great question. And it has certainly changed from when we started the clinic 20 years ago, at which point 20 years ago, there wasn't a whole lot we could do because patients just couldn't afford to see somebody else or get certain tests done. Now we have tremendous support in the community. So for instance, I may have someone that needs to see an orthopedist, and we have the Hyden Orthopedic Group that'll see them either pro bono or at a very, very reduced cost. We have a similar setup now with the Rosenberg Cooley Clinic. We also have 2 volunteer orthopedists who see patients at our clinic. So that gets covered. And if they need tests and exams and surgery, well, Intermountain Healthcare has a program whereby they'll reduce costs to patients who meet their financial criteria. And virtually all of our patients meet those financial criteria. So people can go in and get an MRI for a knee if they have a torn ligament at a dramatically reduced cost.
Yeah, and as you heard Tilly complaining yes. just a minute ago, do you have any partnerships with veterinarians?
she was asking.
We could do that, but no, we don't yet.
Yeah, so it does sound like it's really become this, it's evolved into just this expansive partnership
right.
throughout the community. And are we serving people who just live in Summit County, or have we offered this service to outside of the county?
Right. People's Health Clinic provides free, no-cost health care to the uninsured in both Summit and Wasatch County. As you know, many of those individuals that live in Wasatch County actually work in Summit County and, more importantly, in Park City. And so we just, from the very beginning, have included those in our coverage. And also, there's not a clinic like us in Wasatch County, so we're providing a much-needed service for that area. And we get support from Wasatch as well, County, as well as Heber City and Midway.
And what are the hours of the clinic?
The clinic is open Monday through Friday. We're open full days Monday through Friday with a late day on Tuesday, so 8 to 5, Monday through Thursday, actually. Late on Tuesday, usually till about 7, the clinic will stay open. And then on Fridays, we're open until noon. We were originally only seeing patients when we moved into the Summit County Health Department building 3 days a week. We expanded that to 5 days a week, and then recently expanded Monday to a full day. So I anticipate at some point we'll expand Friday to a full day as well, just depending on patient need.
Now, do you ever anticipate, or maybe you have associations now with dental providers or ophthalmological?
We do have partnerships that have been going on for several years with both both dental providers and eye doctors. That's what I call them.
Thank you.
You bet. The Moran Eye Center has been holding a clinic once a month for our patients. Boy, I can't remember for how long, many, many years now. And so they do a great job. They bring up all their gear. They bring up their people and do exams on our patients and then do the follow-up care that's necessary. So that's been great. We have a volunteer dentist who's been working with us for many years as well, Marielle Patterson. And we've also been able to have multiple dental clinics at our clinic in conjunction with the health department, in conjunction with private dentists in town to provide dental care.
And okay. Through a generous grant this past year, we have purchased a mobile dental chair. So it's portable, and we bring it in and out. And in 2020, we will be holding at first monthly dental clinics with a volunteer physician coming in. He's here during ski season, Dr. Ralph Guercio, and he will assist us in holding monthly, and hopefully we'll get to a point where we're doing weekly, because that's one of the biggest needs in Park City that is unmet, is dental care. It's just one of those, it's the last thing that our patients will spend money to do.
Yeah. And then just finally, what any initiatives that you want to share with us that you have in mind, John, as you're moving into the next decade?
And that's a really good question. I still need to get back to the clinic and talk to the providers and get a better sense of what's been going on in the last year. I think off the top of my head, the main new program I'd like to see us get involved in would be really figuring out how to help our patients with diabetes. That's kind of rampant in our patient population. And, we have kind of a reasonable amount of success. Our patients do, I should say, but we'd really like to do better with that.
Okay. Well, great. Anything else you'd like to say?
I just want to thank the community for this past year, the 20th anniversary year, for the outpouring of support and love shown to the clinic. We've had several celebrations and tours in the clinic and many new providers coming in to volunteer. We really pushed our 20th anniversary year, and we want to keep that going into 2020. And just remember, if you need to quickly make that final year-end contribution for tax purposes, remember the clinic and all of the other great nonprofits in Park City.
Yeah.
And I have just one last thing to add, and that is, although we are a free clinic, we do want our patients to have a financial commitment to their care. And so we ask everyone for a donation of $25 per visit. And about 80 to 85% of our patients are able to make some component of that donation. And that's a pretty significant part of our budget.
Mm-hmm.
But it gives everybody a sense of, no, I'm involved. I'm putting my money on the table as well.
Yeah, sure. Part of the philosophy.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
And one other last thing is, I just want to say how thrilled we are to have Dr. John Hanrahan back as our medical director of the clinic, and hopefully 2020 will be a very healthy and happy year for everyone.
Thank you. That's Beth Armstrong, executive director with the People's Health Clinic. Congratulations, John Hanrahan.
Thank you, okay. Carolyn.
Thanks for coming by this morning. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Oh, good morning. It is 8:48, and next on our local news hour list of guests, we have Tom Horrocks. He's with the he's communications and marketing with the U.S. Ski and Snowboard team and the U.S. Cross Country team. Good morning, Tom.
Hey, good morning.
Yeah, so a big weekend for men's and women's alpine, it sounds like. Men were in Bormio, Italy, while the women were in Lienz, Austria. Let's start off with the alpine results.
Yeah, big weekend all across the board for Alpine. Let's start off with the men. We'll save the best for last and talk about Michaela. But some great results from Bormio, Italy. First and foremost, Ryan Cochran-Siegel was just very consistent throughout the weekend. He was fifth place yesterday in the Alpine combined in Bormio, and he has scored points in all five disciplines so far this year. So he's really proven his consistency. So good job for Ryan Cochran-Siegel. In the downhill, where Travis Ganong suffered an injury a few years ago, he came back and kind of pushed the demons aside, and he was eighth on Friday in the downhill, and that was a downhill that was rescheduled from Val d'Isère last week due to weather. And also 11th place for Ryan Cochran-Siegel there, and 24th by local Stephen Nyman, too, so a good result for them. And then Saturday on downhill day two, again, it was Ryan Cochran-Siegel leading the way, 11th for the Land Rover U.S. Alpine ski team. Stephen was 18th, and Jared Goldberg out of Sundance, Utah, was 22nd. So good results for the men there this weekend in Bormio. And then let's talk about the women. Boy, what can you say about Michaela Schifrin? She not only dominated in Austria, but she picked up World Cup victories number 63 and 64. On Saturday, she absolutely crushed the field in the women's giant slalom, winning by 1.36 seconds to take her 63rd career victory, and she passed Anne-Marie Moser for the outright fourth on the World Cup of victories list. So she's just a few victories behind Marcel Hirscher, of course, Lindsey Vonn with 82, and the great Ingemar Stenmark with 86 World Cup victories. And then Michaela did it again on Sunday, won by 0.61 seconds over Petra Volova and the slalom for World Cup victory number 64. So the women will and the men will go to Croatia next weekend for a slalom series as the World Cup Alpine continues.
Yeah, that's a pretty amazing spread in Alpine racing to beat your next competitor by 1.36 seconds and then even a half a second, 0.61 seconds. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, usually a sport that's measured by hundredths of a second, to win by more than a second is pretty huge.
Yeah. So cross country, I'm sorry, you were going to take us there.
Yeah, cross country. The 14th Tour de Ski opened up this weekend. And the opening stage was a bit challenging for the U.S. ski team. Missed the wax a little bit on the 10K opening freestyle mass start for the women. But we had a great result from Rosie Brennan. Park City, grew up in Park City. She finished 20th. She led the way for the U.S. ski team. Jesse Diggins and Sophie Caldwell were 29th and 30th, respectively, in the 10K freestyle. In the men's 15K freestyle, David Norris was the top American finisher. Kevin Bolger was 64th, and Logan Henneman was 69th. One note, unfortunately, Simi Hamilton could not start the Tour de Ski due to a groin injury. He had a kind of a nagging hamstring injury. Overcame that, had a great result last weekend, but unfortunately pulled his groin training this past week, and he will be returning to Park City in the Center of Excellence for some treatment on that. So he's unfortunately out. Day two of the Tour de Ski, though, was a completely different story. Of course, it favored the Davis U.S. Alpine Ski Team athletes because it was a freestyle sprint. And we had Jesse and Sadie finishing fourth and fifth in the Stage 2 freestyle sprint. And everybody had a great day for the most part. All five American women qualified for the heat, including Sophie Caldwell, who was ninth in the sprint. Julia Kern, who took a podium last weekend, was 14th, and Rosie was 25th. For the men, Logan was 21st, and Kevin Bolger out of Sun Valley, Idaho, was 22nd. So the U.S. team is looking pretty good, and they've changed up the Tour de Ski this year. It's based on points, not on time. So Jesse is currently, if you look at the time, she's 11th, but based on the point system they're using this year, she is sitting second overall. So she is the only American woman to ever finish on the podium, the overall Tour de Ski. So she's well-positioned to do that again this year, and I know she's gunning for the overall victory. So the men and women move to Toblach, Italy tomorrow, and they will race a 10K freestyle for the women and a 15K freestyle for the men in Stage 3 of the Tour de Ski.
Okay, and maybe you want to give us an update on freestyle and free ski snowboard?
Yeah, freestyle. They've had a break. They resume World Cup competition kind of in my neck of the woods here in the Northeast in Tremblant, Quebec on January 25th. And then, of course, they'll be heading back to Utah for the Intermountain Healthcare freestyle at Deer Valley coming up in February. But in the meantime, they'll be training in Colorado at Winter Park and in Steamboat for the month of January. And then local athletes on the aerials team will be training at the Utah Olympic Park prior to their first World Cup event coming up later on next month in Moscow, Russia.
Okay. Anything else, Tom?
You know, we're getting ready to kickstart free ski and snowboard once again. They will kick off back in France January 9th through the 11th. Also, a big thing for the progression of the sport, and I talk about all of our sports, the Youth Olympic Games take place in Lucerne, Switzerland, January 16th through the 22nd. We have athletes competing in Nordic combined, ski jumping, alpine skiing, and cross-country at the Youth Olympic Winter Games. So a lot of great young kids coming up for all of our U.S. programs, and we wish them the best of luck at the Youth Olympic Games coming up in Switzerland next month.
Okay. Well, thank you. That's Tom Horrocks, Communications and Marketing with U.S. Ski and Snowboard. Thanks for joining us. Happy New Year.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
It's 8:55. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. And next on the line, we've got Amber Hansen with the Egyptian Theater. She's the artistic and producing director there. And she's going to tell us a little bit about what we can expect this weekend with James McMurtry appearing at the Egyptian beginning on Friday. Thank you, Amber.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so here's the big question. Is he going to perform the Park City anthem, I'm Not From Here?
Yeah, I'm sure he will. And, you know, we're excited to have James McMurtry on our stage. He's kind of one of those perfect acts for such an intimate stage of singer-songwriters. We do really well with artists like him. And he's, you know, in the same vein of the greats. He's worked with a lot of people, Bob Dylan, John Mellencamp, and he's, you know, one of the true American singer-songwriters, and he's bringing his band, so we're just looking forward to a great night of music, and we hope that everyone will come out for this one.
So he was also identified in the New York Times Magazine cover story for the 25 songs that tell us where music is going, and there was a four-page spread that was featured in this article. Why is McMurtry's work so important in the music world and where it is going?
Yeah, well, he's just considered one of the most poignant and artist and honest, you know, storytellers that tell his story through music. And he has a album coming out this year. He put out an album in 2015, which had huge critical acclaim. But he's going to be putting out a new album this coming year, 2020. So, you know, my hopes is that he's going to be doing a lot of the new music from that. And he's collaborated with a lot of people on this new album. So that's going to be very exciting.
Yeah. So give us a rundown of times and dates,
yep,
that type of thing.
Yeah. James McMurtry with his band will be performing Friday and Saturday night at 8 p.m. and then Sunday night at 6 p.m. at the Egyptian Theater. And we still have tickets available at parkcityshows.com, or the box office is open from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. every day. So you can give us a call, 855-745-SHOW, or just come on by at 328 Main Street.
Okay, thank you very much. That's Amber Hansen with the Egyptian Theater. She's the artistic and producing director there. Thanks, Amber.
Thank you, Carolyn. Have a good one.
Matt here from San Francisco Design, supporting our local radio station, KPCW. Since 1990, San Francisco Design offers interior design and a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings with store locations in Salt Lake City and Park City on Bonanza Drive. On the web at sanfrandesign.com. San Francisco Design. Love your home.
It's 8:59. You've been